Brisinger, the third installment in Christopher Paolini's epic inheritance cycle, captivates readers with its blend of high fantasy, coming-of-age narrative, and complex moral dilemmas. Published in 2008, when Paolini was just 25, the book became an instant New York Times bestseller, selling over 550,000 copies on its first day. What makes this series remarkable is not just its commercial success, but its origin story. Paolini began writing the first book at 15, and his parents initially self-published it before Knopf acquired the rights. The series has since been translated into 49 languages and has sold over 35 million copies worldwide, inspiring a generation of young fantasy readers and even attracting celebrity fans like Christopher Lee and Angela Merkel. Beyond entertainment, the books explore themes of power, responsibility, and identity that resonate deeply with readers navigating their own life transitions. The story opens with Aragorn and his cousin Rohan hiding near Helgrind, the dark stone tower where the Ra'zac, the creatures who murdered Aragorn's uncle Garrow, have imprisoned Rohan's fiancée Katrina. As evening falls, they witness a disturbing religious ceremony led by priests of Helgrind, each missing various limbs in devotion to their twisted faith. The high priest, reduced to merely a torso and head, delivers a sermon in a corrupted mixture of languages before initiating a blood ritual where devotees drink his blood and mutilate themselves in offering to their dread lord. This grotesque display reveals the moral decay festering within the Empire's territories, a society where such perverse worship is permitted to flourish under Galbatorix's rule. The scene establishes the stakes for our heroes. They fight not just against political tyranny, but against the spiritual corruption it enables. The Ra'zac themselves represent this corruption in physical form, creatures who bewitch their prey into desiring to be eaten, a perfect metaphor for how Galbatorix's regime has convinced many citizens to embrace their own destruction. As Aragorn and Rohan prepare for their assault on Helgrind, they share a profound conversation about killing. Rohan confesses to seeing the faces of men he's killed in his dreams, lamenting that he never wanted to be a warrior. "The land was what was important to me. That and our family," he says, revealing how the Empire's aggression has forced ordinary people to become killers. Aragorn understands too well, having slaughtered entire battalions for the Vardin. Their conversation highlights the psychological cost of warfare, how violence transforms those who wield it, even when fighting for just causes. The attack on Helgrind unfolds with breathtaking intensity as Saphira carries Aragorn and Rohan toward the mountain fortress. Their carefully planned assault immediately goes awry when they discover the entrance is concealed by powerful illusion magic. A gentian flower blooming impossibly from solid rock reveals the deception. Inside the cave, they're ambushed by the massive Lethroblaka, the Ra'zac's parents, and the Ra'zac themselves, resulting in a chaotic battle that separates the companions. The fight sequences demonstrate Aragorn's growth as a warrior, using his staff with practiced precision against multiple opponents. The red haze of battle that dims his vision reveals the double-edged nature of combat, the heightened awareness that makes him both more effective and more dangerous. "I never feel so alive or afraid as when fighting," he reflects, acknowledging the disturbing allure of violence. After defeating the Ra'zac and rescuing Katrina, Aragorn makes a discovery that will test his moral compass. Sloane, Katrina's father, and the butcher who betrayed Carvajal to the Empire, imprisoned and blinded by the Ra'zac. Aragorn faces an impossible choice: execute this traitor whose actions led to his village's destruction, or show mercy to a man who has caused immense suffering. The death word trembles on his tongue as he contemplates the simplest solution, but he hesitates, remembering how Murtagh once beheaded a slaver without trial. Has Aragorn changed so much that he would do the same? This pivotal moment forces Aragorn to confront the nature of justice itself. Is it his place to execute Sloane? What would that make him? Instead of violence, he chooses a more complex path, putting Sloane to sleep and later discovering the butcher's true name, granting him power over the man's very essence. This discovery represents a profound shift in Aragorn's journey, moving from physical power to moral authority, a responsibility he never expected to bear. Aragorn's decision regarding Sloane creates the first major divergence in his journey. He must walk the land alone while Saphira returns to the Varden with Rohan and Katrina. This separation tests both dragon and rider, forcing each to function independently while maintaining the illusion of their unity for strategic purposes. For Aragorn, this means a solitary trek carrying Sloane's unconscious form across the Empire's territory, evading Imperial patrols and confronting his own moral boundaries. When Aragorn finally wakes Sloane, their interaction reveals layers of complexity in the butcher's character. Despite his situation, Sloane maintains a cold dignity, claiming he betrayed Carvajal only for Katrina's sake. This justification, that love can lead to terrible acts, challenges Aragorn's black-and-white understanding of morality. Rather than executing Sloane, Aragorn devises a punishment that fits his crimes, sending him to live among the elves, never to see Katrina again until he changes his true nature. Aragorn's solitary journey across the Empire's territory becomes a time of reflection and growth. For the first time since finding Saphira's egg, he finds himself truly alone and welcomes this solitude as a respite from months of arduous training and constant companionship. Yet this independence comes with dangers. Imperial patrols search for him, and he even spots Thorn, Murtaugh's dragon, on the horizon. During this journey, Aragorn experiences nightmares so vivid he believes he's been transported to previous battlefields, seeing the men and Urghuls he's killed standing before him. Curling into a ball, he questions what's wrong with him, believing himself weak compared to heroes in Bram's epics or warriors like Rohan who don't seem troubled by the blood they shed. These night terrors reveal the psychological toll of violence, challenging the glorified image of heroism in traditional epics. His encounter with Tenga, an eccentric old spellcaster living in ancient elven ruins, adds another layer of mystery to the world. Tenga demonstrates alarming magical ability by lighting a fire without speaking in the ancient language, and speaks cryptically about searching for the answer to some unspecified question. This brief interaction hints at deeper magical knowledge beyond what Aragorn has learned from his teachers, suggesting there are still secrets to discover that might aid in the fight against Galbadorix. Meanwhile, in the Varden camp, Nyswada faces her own trial of leadership. The trial of the Long Knives against Fadawar represents a different kind of battle, one of will and endurance rather than swords and magic. By accepting this tribal custom and enduring excruciating pain as cuts are traded on their forearms, Nyswada demonstrates her commitment to unifying the various factions under her command. Her unprecedented endurance earns her the respect of the tribal elders, but at significant physical cost. The contrast between Aragorn's and Nyswada's trials highlights different approaches to leadership and justice. Aragorn chooses mercy, tempered with wisdom, for Sloane, while Nyswada willingly suffers to maintain her authority. Both demonstrate that true leadership often requires personal sacrifice and moral courage rather than simply wielding power over others. The journey culminates in Aragorn's reunion with Arya in Eastcroft, where they narrowly escape a confrontation with Imperial soldiers. Their subsequent travels together deepen their bond, particularly when Aragorn confesses the truth about Sloane. Arya initially criticizes his decision not to kill the butcher as cowardice, but Aragorn defends his moral stance, explaining he won't personally decide who lives or dies without proper authority. Their debate about justice and morality reveals how Aragorn's thinking has evolved beyond simple solutions toward a more nuanced understanding of right and wrong. As Aragorn and Arya travel together, their conversations reveal deeper layers of the world's history and their personal pasts. When Aragorn admits he's troubled not by the wolves outside, but the wolves in here, Arya responds with profound insight. The monsters of the mind are far worse than those that actually exist. This exchange highlights how both characters carry psychological burdens from their experiences of violence and loss. Arya shares her method for coping with killing, examining her reasons, committing to their cause, and using meditation techniques, providing Aragorn with tools to address his own trauma. Their discussion turns to Arya's imprisonment in Gilead, where she resisted Durza's tortures by viewing them as tests of her commitment. When Aragorn observes she seems to walk alone, even among her own people, Arya reveals she once had someone who understood her, Fallon, who traveled with her for over 20 years before Durza killed him. This rare moment of vulnerability from Arya deepens their connection, prompting Aragorn to use magic to grow a glue lily and present it to her. She plants it, explaining the elven significance of flower giving, creating a moment of cultural exchange and emotional intimacy. Later, when spirits transform this flower into living metal with gold stem and leaves, petals of white metal, and a heart of rubies and diamonds, it becomes a physical symbol of their complex relationship. Beautiful, but perhaps not entirely natural. Their conversations also reveal crucial historical information about the Dragons of the Forsworn and the Banishing of the Names, when 13 dragons betrayed their kind to help Galbatorix. The remaining dragons combined their magic to strip these traitors of their names. This spell erased their true names, birth names, and all identifiers, reducing them to little more than animals incapable of self-reference. This revelation provides insight into dragon magic and culture, while explaining why the Forsworn's dragons are never named in histories. Aragorn and Arya's return to the Varden marks a significant transition as they rejoin the larger conflict. The sprawling tent city along the Geat River, teeming with thousands of men, horses, and cook fires, contrasts sharply with the isolation of their journey. Saphira's dramatic arrival, diving from a cloud thousands of feet overhead, spiraling down with streaming fire, announces their return with appropriate grandeur, demonstrating the psychological impact a dragon rider can have on both allies and enemies. The reunion between Aragorn and Saphira represents the restoration of their bond after painful separation. They embrace mentally, sharing memories and emotions from their time apart. Saphira comforts Aragorn over the soldiers he killed, drawing away his accumulated pain and anger. Their playful banter about each other's scents, Saphira defending her dragon perfume as delightful as mountain flowers, compared to humans, whom she likens to male goats and hibernating bears, reestablishes their intimate connection through humor. Behind closed doors, tensions rise as King Orin confronts Nessuada about overstepping her authority. His grievances reveal the complex political dynamics within the Varden's leadership. You act as if yours was the only verdict of moment and the opinions of others are of no account, he declares, threatening to oppose her leadership if she continues to disrespect his royal status. This conflict illustrates how even allies fighting against tyranny can struggle with power dynamics and ego. Nessuada's graceful handling of the situation, attributing any slights to her inexperience rather than intentional disrespect, demonstrates her diplomatic skill. By redirecting the conversation to Aragorn's activities, she diffuses the immediate tension while maintaining her authority. This political maneuvering shows why she's effective as the Varden's leader, despite her youth. When Aragorn reveals everything about Sloane and his journey, both leaders surprisingly approve of his decision to spare the butcher's life. King Orin explains that executing Sloane would have meant Aragorn taking power that rightfully belongs to rulers, making him dangerously similar to Galbodorex. Humans are a short-lived race, and we should not be governed by one of the undying, Orin warns, acknowledging the inherent danger Aragorn represents to the established order. This conversation highlights a central theme of the series, the proper use of power and the dangers of individuals acting as judge, jury, and executioner. Aragon's growing understanding of these complexities represents significant maturation from his earlier, more impulsive self. Before they part, Aragon reassures Nasuada that he has no desire to rule, promising to refuse any throne offered to him, a commitment that will be tested as his power and influence continue to grow. The narrative shifts to more personal matters as Roran asks Aragon to officiate his wedding to Katrina. Though initially shocked, Aragon agrees, only to be further surprised when Roran insists on holding the ceremony in just 2 days. When Aragon questions the rush, Roran hints at the real reason: Katrina is pregnant, adding urgency to their union and highlighting how life continues even amidst war. This wedding request represents a significant moment for Aragon, connecting him to human traditions and family bonds despite his increasingly inhuman nature. As a dragon rider with an extended lifespan and magical abilities, Aragon risks becoming detached from ordinary human concerns. Participating in this ceremony anchors him to his humanity and his origins in Carvajal. Aragon's attempt to remove his curse from Elva represents his effort to correct past mistakes. Having accidentally cursed her as an infant to feel others' pain and compulsively help them, he now carefully constructs a counterspell to free her from this burden. The scene demonstrates the precision required in magic. Each word must be exactly right to achieve the desired effect. To everyone's dismay, Elva announces the spell only partially worked. She can still sense others' pain, but no longer feels compelled to help them. Rather than allowing Aragon to try again, she embraces this new state, realizing she can now ignore other suffering without becoming physically ill. With unsettling glee, she declares her newfound independence. "From now on, I shall answer to no one and no thing." This outcome represents the unpredictable consequences of magic. Even with the best intentions, spells can have results their casters never anticipated. Elva's transformation from victim to potentially dangerous wildcard illustrates how power can change individuals in unexpected ways. When she threatens to use her knowledge of others' fears to fulfill her wishes, she becomes a mirror reflecting Aragon's own potential for corruption if he misused his abilities. Angela's frustration, slapping Aragon and claiming she'll now have to spend a decade teaching Elva proper behavior, adds both humor and gravity to the situation. Her refusal to share her protection spell against Elva's abilities demonstrates how knowledge itself becomes currency in this world, hoarded and protected even among allies. This episode serves as a cautionary tale about magical intervention and the long-term consequences of well-intentioned actions. Meanwhile, Aragon's quest for a replacement sword becomes increasingly urgent after his falchion shatters during the dwarf assassination attempt. His visit to the Varden's armory highlights the practical challenges of being a dragon rider without a proper rider sword. Ordinary blades cannot withstand the edge-on-edge combat style he learned from the elves. Frederick, the weapon master, explains the technical aspects of swordcraft, noting that the Thrickensdahl technique, edge-hardened at the cutting edge but flexible at the spine, represents the best available option for non-magical blades. This detailed discussion of metallurgy and sword design grounds the fantasy world in practical reality, showing how even in a world of magic, physical craftsmanship matters. The scene also demonstrates Aragon's growth in patience and humility. Despite his power as a dragon rider, he listens attentively to Frederick's lengthy instructions about proper sword maintenance. When Frederick insists on teaching him to care for his weapon before himself, Aragon accepts this wisdom rather than asserting his status. This willingness to learn from experts in various fields shows his maturation from the impulsive farm boy of earlier books. The aerial battle between Aragon and Murtaugh represents the tragic culmination of their relationship, former friends forced to fight as enemies due to circumstances beyond their control. Aragon desperately tries to convince Murtaugh and Thorne they can free themselves from Galbedorix by changing their true names through personal transformation. This appeal to hope and self-determination contrasts with Murtaugh's fatalistic acceptance of his servitude. The dragons engage in fierce physical combat, while their riders duel both physically and mentally. Saphira's experience and agility give her advantages against the younger Thorn, but Murtaugh's enhanced magical abilities, later revealed to come from Eldenari, allow him to quickly heal injuries that should be debilitating. This imbalance of power illustrates Galbedorix's unfair advantage in the conflict. Most painful for Aragorn is facing Zarok, the sword he once wielded, now in Murtaugh's hands. When the blade pierces Aragorn's hip, he experiences both physical and emotional pain, a literal and metaphorical wound from his past. This symbolism extends to their relationship as brothers. Murtaugh has taken what once belonged to Aragorn, the sword, just as he claims their shared heritage as sons of Morzon. The battle ends in stalemate, with Murtaugh and Thorn escaping after being temporarily overpowered by the combined energy of Saphira and the elves. Aragorn's regret at forgetting to use the energy stored in Braum's ring Arryn highlights how even experienced warriors can make critical mistakes in the heat of battle. This imperfection makes Aragorn more relatable despite his growing powers. He remains fallible and human despite his transformation into something more. After the aerial battle, Aragorn and Saphira discover a terrifying new development in the war, soldiers who have been magically rendered impervious to pain. The scene where a laughing soldier continues advancing despite grievous wounds creates a disturbing image of unnatural warfare. The soldier's revelation that Galbedorix has promised comfort for their families in exchange for this service adds moral complexity. These aren't mindless automatons, but men making desperate sacrifices for loved ones. This development escalates the conflict's horror while demonstrating Galbedorix's strategic cunning. By removing pain, the natural consequence of injury, he creates warriors who will fight beyond normal human endurance. Only beheading proves effective against these unnatural soldiers, forcing the Vardan to adopt more brutal tactics. The heavy casualties, around 500 to 600 Vardan dead against only 300 of the Empire's soldiers, illustrate the effectiveness of this strategy and the increasing cost of the rebellion. Despite the day's bloodshed, Rohan and Katrina decide to proceed with their wedding as planned, unwilling to risk further delay. This juxtaposition of marriage amid warfare highlights how life celebrations continue even in darkness, a testament to human resilience and the need for moments of joy amid suffering. Their decision represents a refusal to let war dictate every aspect of their lives, maintaining humanity in inhumane circumstances. The wedding ceremony provides a rare moment of normalcy and celebration amid the constant warfare. When asked what Rohan brings to the marriage, Horst declares he brings his name, his hammer, his hands, and the promise of a farm in Carvajal, a bold statement that shocks the crowd by publicly committing to return home after defeating the Empire. This declaration of hope for the future gives the Vardan struggle concrete purpose beyond abstract concepts like freedom. Katrina's dowry, arranged by Naswada, includes magnificent jewelry presented by Birgit. This generosity from the Vardan's leader seems purely kind, until Aragorn later learns it was a strategic investment in Rohan's loyalty, a reminder that even moments of apparent goodwill often serve political purposes in wartime. This revelation doesn't diminish the beauty of the ceremony, but adds complexity to Naswada's character as a leader who consistently thinks several moves ahead. After the traditional vows are exchanged, Aragorn binds their wrists with a red ribbon and declares them married, while Saphira blesses the couple by touching each on the brow. This blending of human tradition with draconic blessing symbolizes the union of old and new ways that might emerge after Galbatorix's defeat, a society that honors tradition while embracing magical elements. As wedding gifts, Aragorn presents them with enchanted gold rings that will alert him if they're in danger and allow them to call for help. He also gives Rohan his stallion Snowfire. These practical gifts reflect Aragon's growing wisdom. Rather than showy displays, he provides tools that might save their lives in dangerous times. The rings, in particular, represent his ongoing commitment to protect his family despite his broader responsibilities as a writer. Nasuada's instruction for Aragon to have Duvrangergata replicate Galbatorix's spell for their own warriors represents a moral compromise. By adopting the enemy's tactics, the Vardan risk becoming what they fight against. This ethical dilemma, how far to go in defeating evil without becoming evil, recurs throughout the narrative as the protagonists face increasingly difficult choices. The revelation that Bram, not Morzan, is Aragorn's true father represents one of the most significant plot developments in the series. This discovery transforms Aragorn's understanding of himself and his place in the world. Rather than being the son of the first and most powerful Forsworn, Galbatorix's right hand, he is the child of the man who killed Morzan and helped found the Vardan. Oromus explains that Bram, once Morzan's admiring fellow apprentice, developed intense hatred for him after Morzan betrayed the Riders. 20 years ago, Bram infiltrated Morzan's castle to kill the mysterious Black Hand, Aragorn's mother, but instead fell in love with her. She had grown disillusioned with Morzan due to his cruelty toward her and baby Murtaugh, and began supplying information to the Vardan. This complex history reveals how personal relationships intertwine with political conflicts. Aragorn's very existence resulted from a spy mission that transformed into a love affair. His mother stayed with Morzan to help the Vardan and protect Murtaugh, while Bram disguised himself as a gardener for 3 years to be near her. This romantic subplot amid political intrigue adds emotional depth to the rebellion's history. The revelation also reframes Aragorn's relationship with Bram. What seemed like coincidental mentorship now appears as a father watching over his son from a distance, unable to reveal his identity for fear of endangering him. Bram's sacrifice, giving up the chance to raise his son openly to protect him, demonstrates the personal costs of the long struggle against Galbatorix. Through Saphira, Aragorn receives Bram's recorded message acknowledging him as his son and expressing pride in him. This posthumous connection provides emotional closure while offering crucial advice: protect loved ones and use intelligence rather than raw power against Galbatorix. Moved to tears, Aragorn declares himself proud to carry Bram's name, embracing this new understanding of his heritage as a source of strength rather than shame. The revelation of the Eldunari, dragons' hearts of hearts that can contain their consciousness even after death, provides crucial information about Galbatorix's power source while expanding the mythology of dragons. Gladair explains that these crystalline organs allow dragons to communicate across vast distances and lend their strength to magicians. Galbatorix has captured hundreds of these Eldunari, enslaving the dragons' minds and using their power to maintain his rule. This discovery explains the seemingly insurmountable advantage Galbatorix holds over his opponents. It's not merely his personal power, but the accumulated strength of hundreds of enslaved dragon consciousnesses that makes him nearly invincible. Understanding this mechanism provides hope. If these Eldunari could somehow be freed or their connection to Galbatorix severed, his power would diminish significantly. The concept of Eldunari adds philosophical depth to dragon nature. These beings can choose a form of immortality distinct from physical reproduction, preserving their consciousness and wisdom for future generations. Most dragons choose not to extend their existence through their Eldunari, except the extremely old, who seek to ponder eternal questions. These ancient dragons were revered for their wisdom, making Galbatorix's enslavement of them particularly cruel. Saphira finds comfort knowing she's not as alone as she thought, even though these captive dragons cannot reproduce. This emotional response highlights her isolation as one of the last free dragons, a burden she has carried throughout the series. The knowledge that other dragon consciousnesses exist, even in enslaved form, provides hope that dragon culture and wisdom might someday be restored rather than lost forever. The Manoa tree represents another ancient power in Alagaesia, an ancient pine that contains the consciousness of Linnea, an elf who merged with the tree after killing her unfaithful lover. When Aragorn approaches the tree seeking the weapon Solumbum mentioned, he encounters a consciousness vastly different from his own, ancient, patient, and connected to the entire forest. After failed attempts at communication, Saphira attacks the tree in frustration, biting and clawing at its massive trunk. This rash action seems disastrous until the tree responds, capturing both dragon and rider in its roots. Rather than killing them, the Manoa tree communicates with Aragorn, eventually agreeing to give him what he seeks, Brightsteel from beneath its roots, in exchange for an unspecified future payment. This interaction demonstrates the complex nature of power in Paulini's world. The Manoa tree's might differs fundamentally from that of dragons or magicians. It's slower, but perhaps more profound, connected to the land itself, rather than derived from physical strength or magical knowledge. The tree's patience, waiting centuries if necessary to collect its debt, contrasts sharply with the urgent timelines of the war against Galbata Torix. The creation of Brisinger represents not just the forging of a sword, but the completion of Aragorn's identity as a dragon rider. Through the intricate process of heating, folding, and hammering the bright steel, Runon transforms the raw material into something greater than its components, just as Aragorn's experiences have transformed him from a farm boy into a warrior and leader. The bright steel Aragorn receives enables Runon to forge him a new rider's sword, despite her oath never to create such weapons again. By controlling Aragorn's body while he retains consciousness, she finds a clever workaround to her vow, demonstrating how even seemingly absolute magical oaths can sometimes be circumvented through creative interpretation. This collaboration between elf and human, combining ancient craftsmanship with new methods, symbolizes how traditions can adapt to meet present needs without being abandoned entirely. The sword's unique property, bursting into sapphire flames whenever Aragorn speaks its name, symbolizes how this weapon is an extension of himself rather than merely a tool. Runon theorizes this happens either because Aragorn helped forge it, imbuing it with his personality, or because he discovered the sword's true name. Either explanation suggests a profound connection between rider and weapon that transcends ordinary ownership. With his new sword, marked with the elvish glyph for fire, Aragorn achieves a sense of completion he has lacked since losing Zarok. The blue blade matching Saphira's scales, curved bright steel crossguard, and sapphire pommel create a visual harmony between rider, dragon, and weapon. This aesthetic unity reflects the internal harmony Aragorn has achieved by accepting his heritage as Braum's son and his role as a dragon rider. The timing of this acquisition proves crucial, as Aragorn and Saphira must soon depart to join the Varden siege of Feinster. The sword's creation marks the end of Aragorn's preparation phase and the beginning of his direct confrontation with Galbataric's forces. With Brisinger in hand, he is finally a rider in full, equipped not just physically, but mentally and emotionally for the challenges ahead. The climactic battle at Feinster intertwines with tragedy at Gilead, as Aragorn experiences Aromas and Glaedor's final battle through his connection to Glaedor's Eldenari. This dual perspective creates a powerful narrative effect. While physically fighting a newly created shade in Feinster, Aragorn's consciousness witnesses his mentor's deaths hundreds of miles away. Through Glaedor's eyes, Aragorn observes as Galbataric speaks through Murtaugh, first offering Aromas a chance to join him, then threatening him when refused. When Aromas suffers from his bone blight illness during the battle, dropping his golden sword Naegling, Murtaugh seizes the opportunity to deliver a fatal blow. Consumed by grief and rage, Glaedor attacks Thorne, biting off part of his tail before being wounded himself and retreating into his Eldenari. This devastating loss transforms the conflict's dynamics. Aragorn and Saphira are now truly the last free Dragon Rider pair in Alagaesha. The responsibility that falls to them becomes even heavier, as they no longer have Aromas and Glaedor's wisdom to rely on. Yet, Glaedor's consciousness surviving in his Eldenari provides a thread of hope. Though diminished, their mentor's knowledge remains accessible. Meanwhile, in Feinster, Aragorn and Arya face the newly created Shade Varug. Despite their exhaustion and grief, they work together to defeat this powerful enemy, with Arya delivering the fatal blow to the heart while Aragorn distracts the Shade mentally. This victory amid personal loss demonstrates their resilience and determination to continue the fight despite overwhelming odds. As dawn breaks over Feinster, Aragorn and Saphira stand on the city walls watching the sunrise, its golden rays illuminating the smoke and fires from battle. This image of light emerging after darkness symbolizes hope amid devastation, a visual representation of their emotional journey from despair to determination. Initially overwhelmed by grief, Aragorn still feels Glaedor's final emotions, the terrible isolation of losing his rider. Saphira points out they are now the last free dragon and rider left, making them feel desperately alone and unprepared for the burden they must carry. Yet as the sun warms them, their melancholy gradually dissipates, replaced by renewed purpose. Aragorn realizes they aren't truly alone. They have each other, plus Arya, Nasuada, Oryk, and even Glaedor's Eldenari. This recognition of their support network transforms their perspective from isolation to connection, from weakness to strength through alliance. With this renewed determination, Aragorn holds Glaedor's Eldenari up to the sun, smiling with anticipation for the battles to come. Most importantly, they now understand Galbatorix's weakness. His power comes from enslaved Eldenari rather than innate ability. This knowledge provides a potential path to victory, transforming what seemed an impossible task into a difficult but conceivable one. As the third book concludes, Aragorn and Saphira stand ready to face their greatest challenge with clear purpose and the hope that even the most powerful tyrant has vulnerabilities that can be exploited by those brave enough to try.